Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Indeed, welcome to Lost in the Static. And as I promised last week, Scott the Voice Murray would be back this week.
Hi, everybody. It's good to be back.
Did you like the way I gave you an elegant intro?
Yes. Talk some more for me.
I am talking right now.
Okay, good.
Yeah, we figured out what the issue was.
Yeah, we figured out what the issue was, and it was not just me fiddling knobs this time. Thank you.
You're still a knob fiddler, though.
Yes, and once again, I don't know what the hell is up with my microphones. They either disappear entirely, which two have done now.
I blame your cats.
I think so. I think Dexter's trying to start a voiceover career. So we're on a backups of backups of backups.
We'll have to see how this turns out. But yeah. But if you want to talk about backups, if you don't want to be backed up, you go to adamandeve.com, use the promo code STATIC to get 50% off of a single item, 3 free DVDs, free U.S. shipping, and a free mystery gift. Static at adamandeve.com. But this episode specifically
is
sponsored by, and the topic by, our friend Andrew Joyce of Console Alliance.
Yes, he is one of a crew of people that run a website called
ConsoleAlliance.com.
It's a gorgeous looking little website where you can get all your video game related stuff, and it's everything from
comedy videos, reviews.
Yeah, gaming culture. It looked like some reviews were there and some very interesting insights into the video gaming deal. And speaking of video gaming, there was this little thing that happened a little while ago.
It was a blip on the radar. Yeah. I'm sure most gamers weren't even aware of this
thing.
Right,
but someday it might become something big, and it's this thing
I don't
called,
know. I think you are assigning aspirations to this thing. This E3 thing is never going to catch
exactly.
on.
Exactly. It's called E3, and it's a little video game conference where some makers of consoles and some makers of video games get together, and they kind of show off what they're working on for the year.
It's a giant "my dick is bigger than your dick" in the video game industry contest.
It really has been, and So it's E3 is itself has gone through. We're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to talk about the evolution of E3, the rise, the fall, the rise again of E3 itself, and we're going to talk about marketing video games and how it's done.
Lies, you mean?
At E3.
Lies.
For the most part, in a lot of the AAA titles, there is quite a bit of lying going on. And but recently, for the indie titles, especially one on PlayStation called Entwine, they showcased an indie-ish title that it was unheard of prior to this year, you know, prior to...
It's usually the big, the Halos and the Just Causes and all
and,
that.
I mean, you know, and the little guys have a presence there, but it's never covered. And recently, though, they've kind of gone, hey, wait a minute, there are a bunch of these other little developers that are looking at games in ways that people hadn't looked at games before.
Because I think, this is just supposition, I think the big companies are starting to notice that the little companies are doing more than chipping away at their market share. And I think they're starting to see them as serious competition.
They're getting there.
Yeah, well, okay, the step towards serious
competition. Let's start off, Josh. I want to talk about the E3s that I remember and the E3s that I remember starting to pay attention to. The E3s from the late 90s up until the early aughts, that short bit when Tech TV and G4
both existed.
Both still existed, and when G4 did something other than
Attack
Cops.
Of the Show.
No, they don't even do Attack of the Show anymore.
Shows you how much I fucking watch that.
Right.
All right.
Well, trust me, I've seen their ratings. Nobody watches G4 anymore. But back when Tech TV and G4 were still around, E3, I mean, they had 24-hour
I do remember, like, yeah, they had live interviews, and right after some big presentation by one of the big boys, they'd be like, all right, here's the breakdown, and we've got the trailers to show you and all this. And
yep.
Yeah, this is Comic-Con for video games. You know how yes. Comic-Con is not just about comics anymore. It's a media event. That's right. What E3 is. It's a media event.
Yes.
Happens to be about games.
And E3, by the way, for those that are wondering, stands for Electronic Entertainment Expo. And it started out in Las Vegas and as something rather tiny.
Well, most con, I don't want to call this a con, but most, what the hell would you call this?
Well, a lot of conventions, a lot of expos, a lot of expo.
That's the word.
A lot of expos.
A lot of expos do start out rather small.
Right, but E3 started out kind of like the Consumer Electronics Show, another biggie that was out there. You know,
people
it started
in the
out
industry, and that's about it.
It started out as a bunch of nerds going, "Hey, look what I made," and E3 started out as a bunch of video game nerds going, "Hey, look what we made." And then the big boys got involved, and we talked about it in our Console Wars episode, and E3 became the showcase for the 16-bit era and early 32-bit era.
Well, yeah, you've got to, you know, hitting your E3 date. Doesn't matter if the game's ready. You've got to have your presentation ready by
right.
E3.
Right, and that's the way it was. And It stayed that way for a long time until they moved E3 for a while, and attendance started going down. It started meaning less, and then it kind of ramped up again when we saw the Xbox and the PlayStation go head to head.
And Nintendo was still involved, but Nintendo. Yeah. It's really a war between Microsoft and Sony. That's really what it is.
It has been for the last few years. Now, Nintendo was a big player during the GameCube N64 days.
Okay,
I was going the other way
okay.
because they were a huge player at that time, and Nintendo had all of the console specific games. They had all the licenses. They had Zelda, for God's sake. And recently, Nintendo, especially since the Wii sales wise has been kind of disappointing, and the Wii U even more disappointing. They're kind of like, and we're here too.
Hey, look at me. I'm still relevant. Still relevant.
Now, last year, 2013, E3 popped up big on everybody's radar.
I saw this covered on national news.
Yeah, and the reason you saw it covered on national news was because they were bringing out the X-Bone, and they were bringing out the PS4, and we had Microsoft going, hey, look, we're not just for games, we're an entertainment console now.
Yeah, this is when the Xbox One debacle.
Right.
I mean, seriously, I saw every media outlet say, do you know how not to do a sales presentation? Watch the Xbox One presentation. This is almost like an Andy. I saw one place that said, this is like an Andy Kaufman prank, but real.
Yeah.
That's how bad the Xbox One's presentation at E3 2013 was.
Yeah, it went very, very badly for them. And yeah, Sony beat the heck out of them that time. 2014 rolls around. We have Microsoft going retract, 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 retract on a lot of their statements. And we have Sony basically sitting there going, we got some cool stuff. Now, the interesting thing about this year is that Sony showcased a lot of really good games, and the overall feeling is that Sony still won. Now, I don't know if they were still riding high from last year or what, but the overall feeling I've seen is that Sony still won, mainly because Xbox was going, we didn't mean when we said this last year, we did, and look at these games. And
look over there. There's a new Halo coming out over there.
But the thing is, neither one of them really showed off with a few exceptions, obviously, like Little Big Planet 3 and some other things to get excited about, neither one of them showed off console-specific games.
Well, I think that's because last year, let's say for the sake of argument, Xbox did not gimp it up completely last year, okay, Scott?
All right.
Last year, you had the emergence. Hey, look, this is PS4. Look at all of what it can do. Look at all the new games. Hey, look, this is Xbox One. Look at all the new games. This year, it's you already have the Xbox One and you already have the PS4. These are just the games. I think there's a different energy, for lack of a better way to put it, when you've got the new console. Look at what we can do, not look at what we can continue to do.
You're looking at there's less of a feeling of innovation.
Yeah, and it's more of almost a status quo, really.
And especially on Microsoft's side. There was a lot of retraction and a lot of going...
This was Microsoft, the correction.
Yeah, and it was Microsoft going, no, games still mean something to us. And that was pretty much their entire presentation was, hey, look, we're still about games. I know what we said last year, but we're still about games. Kinect was nowhere to be seen, anything like that. Now Sony did have a couple of interesting innovations that they showed off, including, and I'm sorry, I'm not even going to attempt because I can't remember the name for it, but it's they're coming out
the virtual reality one?
The virtual reality coming out fighting against the Oculus Rift. And the Oculus Rift, for those unfamiliar with it, which
including me,
it's a headset that goes over and it's basically a pair of goggles, hooks up to a PC, and there are lots and lots of little games, especially lots and lots of free indie games out there that support the Oculus Rift. And it's, instead of looking around using the mouse or something, you just turn your head.
I think this sounds like 90s virtual reality. I'm expecting Jeff Fahey to go, I am God here!
But it works, and it's cheap enough that it's still rather expensive, but it's down in the consumer level.
High-end consumer.
Not even really high-end. Middle to high-end consumer level. There are plenty of YouTubers out there that play with it, and it looks neat. I think after a while I would find it annoying, but that's just me.
Sounds like it's kind of a gamer's version of Google Glass, kind of.
Yeah,
or am I oversimplifying?
You're oversimplifying, I think.
Okay.
But nonetheless, Sony came out with a peripheral for the PS4 that is an answer to Oculus Rift. Microsoft didn't. Sony came out with a revamp of their new network because that was another grand E3 announcement of them, you know, the PlayStation Home that did not take off at all. In fact, it pretty much was an abject failure. And so they've really come out swinging this time with their rethinking of the PlayStation Network and some other things on that side of it. So there was innovation there, especially on Sony's side.
Whereas Microsoft still has, hey, you want that? You want the Xbox Live? Pay for it.
Yeah, and it's a shame. And so really, I think it's clear to me that at least 1 year in, I think Sony is going to dominate this entire generation of gaming, much more so than they did against the Xbox 360. Maybe I'll be proven wrong in the future. But I kind of doubt it.
Future events such as these may happen.
Yes,
in the future.
And again, we had Nintendo, especially with the Wii U.
Nintendo was just there.
They presented some games and they presented some stuff.
They didn't even get the coverage. Like I said, there was national coverage of this. It was all about Microsoft and Sony.
Yeah, but it's kind of a shame to see Nintendo being an also ran candidate,
but they did it to themselves. Well, let's be fair. Nintendo did it to themselves.
Well, the big thing with the Wii U, and this was the big gamble that Nintendo took, and I think it's where they failed, is they wanted to introduce a whole new concept called asymmetrical gaming. And if we're playing a game on PC, and let's say you and I are playing split-screen co-op, which is something that's coming back. I'm excited. I'm seeing more and more games out there with split-screen co-op, and I was like, yay! But nonetheless, if we're playing a split-screen game, you and I would each have an Xbox 360 controller plugged into the computer, and we're playing away, and we're on a level playing field, right? The entire deal with the Wii U is you have three players on a level playing field having fun, especially with the new Super Mario Brothers Wii U, and you've got this fourth player with this weird kind of little handheld console thing and a pen, and instead of playing a character, they get to be the platform placer. Woo! Who's going to do that? And game companies are going, we've come out with this great property where everybody's on the, you know, we've come out with Call of Duty where everybody's on a level playing ground. And then they look at the Wii U system and they go, well, now we have to come up with something for the person with the gamepad to do. And so they have to rewrite their code entirely, so it's not even really supported in places. This whole idea of asymmetrical gaming didn't work.
But then there's also this thing which was pushed by every company this year, the same as they have for the last few, is it's a trend in gaming I don't like. I know you probably are going to disagree with me. I know a lot of listeners are going to disagree with me, but focus on co-op and multiplayer. That, I mean, like Saints Row 4 came out in 2013. Half the side missions are co-op only. You've got all, you know, the Mass Effect stuff. Remember when Mass Effect 3 came out? Yeah, those on that they want you. We want you to play this with other people. One of the big complaints I've heard about Watch Dogs, we'll get more into that in a little bit, about the actual gameplay itself is they bury the external hacking controls in so many submenus. Most people don't even realize that while you're playing the game, other players on the live network are hacking you and stealing your shit in game. You can turn it off, but you've got to go through so many submenus because they don't want you to turn it off. This community gameplay is a trend I cannot stand, Scott. What happened to, I want to play a game and immerse myself in this environment and in this story without having to deal with some guy in Thailand calling me a faggot?
And I agree for the most part. And when I first got my 360, I was all about the online gaming, and I was playing, and I found out that my mother is sleeping with a lot of teenagers across, you know, the nation.
You also find out there's a lot of people that think you're black.
Yeah.
Because I've been called a nigger faggot I don't know how many times in online play.
Yep. And so I shut it off. I didn't get into it. Now, recently I've been kind of playing the co-op that I've been dealing with has been basically PC specific, and it's been dealing with games like Garry's Mod and stuff like that, where you can be selective about who you play with. And I like that, especially since, unfortunately, Garry's Mod has been kind of sitting in my Steam folder going, play me. And I'm like, I don't have anybody to play me with. So I want to, because there's some very interesting user-created games within that environment. And that's where I see part of co-op going. I think the AAA stuff that you're talking about, yeah, it's, I'm not real big on the way Watch Dogs does it. I'm not real big on the sneaky multiplayer or the always-present multiplayer, whether you want it to be or not.
But it's also something that they think is the next revelation. Look at Sony's presentation when they talked about Halo 5. They barely mention the story at all. It's all
Sony's presentation on Halo 5?
Microsoft. Microsoft. I said the wrong thing. Where they barely talked about the story at all. It's like the single-player campaign is just, you know, it's a 10-hour tutorial on the multiplayer, but the multiplayer is where it really is. We got all the innovations, and we've put all this stuff into the network, and the multiplayer. I guess you can play the single player if you
want. Josh, when it comes to Halo, yeah, and I would agree with them, because Halo, ever since Halo 3, it's been all about the multiplayer. Mainly because that's where the lasting.
I know I'm an idiot.
You're not an idiot. You're just rare. However, that's where the indie gamers that we see and the indie game creators, where we see them flourishing, is in creating these beautiful worlds and these interesting stories, and sometimes with older game mechanics, things like Night of the Rabbit, where it's this beautiful animation style and it's a very simple point and click adventure. And you're seeing the indie pick up on the single side and on the story side, and places like
I've seen the indie ones with a lot of, they have some of the more moody when it comes to style.
It depends on the game, because I've seen that more.
You don't see that as much in the big budget
stuff. Unfortunately, there is a trend with the indies that I don't like right now, and that's the Slender games. Now, I've talked about Slender Man, and I like that whole mythos, and I like, you know, I like what Marble Hornets is doing and that media side of it. The Slender games and the Slender knockoffs, enough. Walking around in the dark with a flashlight, picking up pieces of paper while something jumps out and goes boo. It's YouTube fodder.
Fatal Frame.
It's worse than that. It's not even that interesting anymore. But nonetheless, when it comes to story, I think, you know, it's your indie games that are going to pick up and run with story, where they can't afford the big online MOBAs and the big online MMOs and stuff like that. They can't afford that stuff. And so they create a very engrossing game based around story, Among the Sleep being one of them, the Octodad series, which is frustrating and hilarious to play at the same time. You've got that stuff showing up at E3 now.
But do you think their constant push for online is how it's supposed to be now?
I think
is incredibly short-sighted, because I'm going to, like, the Ghostbusters game that came out in, what was that, 09, 10 maybe?
10, I think.
The servers have been shut down for over a year, so they kept pushing the online, you get to catch ghosts with all your friends. Yeah, that's a completely useless feature. They just shut down the Bulletstorm servers after a couple of years. That basically, unless it's an A title like a Halo or whatnot, that online, which is probably 90% of their presentation, is only going to be active for the next 1 or 2 years. Isn't that incredibly short-sighted to sell your game on something that you have to play now because you can't in 5 years?
I don't know.
To me, that's short-term gain only, and they're not playing the long game.
In video games in general, there is no long game.
I disagree with that, but that's a different topic.
Right. So let's move on, though. Let's talk about how, since we are talking about AAA titles and versus indies and stuff like that, let's talk about how games are marketed, especially
lies. This is the lies I was getting at.
Especially at E3.
Well, just last year, I guess the trailer came out in 2012, but you have the Aliens Colonial Marines fiasco, where they had, it wasn't a trailer, it was a playable demo. Now, this wasn't even something that was faked, because journalists got to play the demo for it, and it was fantastic. Then the game comes out, it looks worse, it's lost all the dramatic lighting, half the levels are gone, half the abilities are gone, it's sluggish, and you go, you did not deliver the game, you sold us. That has become the trend at E3. I saw Cracked recently did an article, I think it was David Wong himself that wrote it, that was basically, everything you see at E3 is a lie, and you're stupid to believe a single trailer or gameplay demo that you see at E3, because the statistics say it will not look like that or play like that when you get it in your home.
Right.
So then why do people still put so much stock? Oh my God, Halo 5 looks so amazing. You know it's not going to look like that when they deliver it. Why?
Because you look at the mechanics and you look at the world, and especially in reference specifically to Halo, it's a world that people like to return to. It's like returning, like the Harry Potter books. And you go back and you go, yeah, I get to, you know, see what's happening in the world of Harry Potter again, or in the Star Wars universe with the expanded universe. Yeah, I get to go back and see what Kyle Katarn is up to stuff.
One like Last of Us. It's kind of a zombie game, but it's zombies and you're fighting other survivors.
Mm-hmm.
The demo at E3 was fantastic. Brilliant AI. The character, the bad guys' characters would react to what you were doing, including, like, instead of just running at you like a horde, one guy would run away and then try and ambush you later. In the game, they just run at you like zombies. Just, you shoot him in the face. You shoot him in the face, and you go, where is this advanced AI that you not only promised us, but you showed us? Where is this? Why is it not in the game? How is that not false advertising then, Scott? Because in the case of Colonial Marines, they got sued in a class action lawsuit for false advertising. I think that's the first time that's ever happened. From, you did not deliver the game you sold us.
It's a handy little trick. So, you know, work in progress.
Is it all just sleight of hand?
Alpha, work in progress.
But a work in progress tends
to get better.
Not a work in progress shouldn't go backwards when you finally deliver the product.
I know. And, you know, the other thing that they're doing is, since they are pushing out these games and they're working so hard, sometimes a playable demo isn't available by the time E3 rolls around, or by the time
it's a pre-rendered trailer.
It's basically a pre-rendered trailer, and you said yourself that, you know, guys who are playing the game at their presentation have dropped controllers, and yet the player still reacts as if they're playing.
But that's the thing. Why not just be honest and say, you know what, this is gameplay we captured and we're showing you. Not have a guy up there with a controller pretending to play the trailer. That, to me, shows just that's shyster level. That's snake oil salesman level of salesmanship. We will do anything to get your goddamn money, including lying to you, and you'll not only forgive us, you'll still buy the fucking game.
And I hate to say it, but in the case of Benny,
he's had a long, long day.
It's been a very, very long day. Anyway, in the case of many AAA titles, yeah, and I don't know. Well, let's talk Watch.
Okay, sure. Before we get to Watch, to me, this is telling a lie when you don't have to. Most people would accept this is a captured game footage that we're showing you. Why lie when you don't have to lie?
And luckily, you're seeing enough game journalists covering this stuff that they're getting caught, and that's a good thing. Getting caught is a very good thing. We have people like Jim Sterling, and we have people like Yahtzee Crenshaw and Total Biscuit and plenty of people out there like that that totally catch them in the lies and.
But they still seem to think they can get away with it, or they wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. You're asking me to put myself in people's feet.
Okay, well,
feet
then the question I have is, like with the current Watch Dogs controversy, first explain what the Watch Dogs controversy is so we can talk about that a little bit more.
Okay, the Watch Dogs controversy is that in E3 20, I believe it was 13 or 12, maybe it was 12, they showed this
trailer
gameplay. Well, no, they showed actual gameplay, and they had a demo that was gorgeous. It was pushing the PS4 and the Xbone to their limits.
Why do you call it the Xbone? Just curious.
XB1.
Oh, okay.
Xbone.
Fair enough. I just didn't get the reference.
That's okay. But they were pushing these new consoles to the limits, and it was a company, a reputable company that has put out some decent games, Ubisoft, saying, look at what we can do. We have enough power now that look at what we can do.
This is true next-gen gaming.
Yeah, this is true next-gen gaming. And then the game came out, and it didn't. I'm not going to pretend that it looked bad by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay.
But your frame rate was dropped.
I'm going to jump ahead just for one second to because I want to talk about that looking bad thing. Now, when you were showing me some of this before the show, I thought this didn't look bad until you showed me the footage from the trailer.
Right.
So I guess you could say it only looks bad if you have a frame of reference to what it should. Kind of like Colonial Marines. It doesn't necessarily look terrible until you saw how great the demo looked.
Well, it's kind of like, here's a supermodel on a magazine cover. when you see the original, you don't know how much photoshopping is going on and how much makeup they're wearing until you see the original photograph.
Yes.
And that's Watch Dogs in reverse.
It doesn't look bad unless you know how much better it should have looked.
Right. And even when dealing with just frame rate, your frame rate, generally on this generation of consoles, you're talking somewhere on anywhere from 60 frames per minute to 100 or per second per minute.
Jesus, Scott.
Yeah. But no, 60 frames per second to on high-end systems, and if you can push it, you can pull 120 frames per second.
PC's obviously a little bit higher.
PC's a decent game will run at a very minimum of 100 to 120 frames per second. And everybody except for the tech nerds just fell asleep. However, Watch Dogs on the PC, Watch Dogs on the Xbox, Watch Dogs on the PS4, locked at 30 frames per second.
Which is half of what it should be.
Initially, when it first came out. Because I'm sure people are like, but I'm running it.
I'm sure there's mods.
Yeah, there are plenty of mods out there, and I believe Ubisoft even patched it at one point. But, so, we have a frame rate drop unnecessarily, especially when it comes to PC, because I have a high-end PC. If I want to push it, I should have the option within a game like Watch Dogs to push it.
Yeah, if you're getting frame rate skips or screen tearing or something, then you can turn it down if you want.
Right.
But you should have the option to turn it up if you want to from the default.
And Watch Dogs couldn't. And compared to the demo that they showed and compared to the gameplay footage, everything looked muddled and it looked a little
flat.
Too clean.
I
and
think flat's the word yeah. you're looking for.
And recently, in playing with the code on the PC and playing with console code on a PC, a user discovered the exact artifacts, the graphical artifacts used in that demo, locked in the game itself, in the code.
So what you're saying is it's on the disc.
Yes.
But for whatever reason, they chose not to use it.
Right. And he came out with a mod. So if you have Watch Dogs on the PC, you can pick up this mod and boom, your graphics are back. It takes a very high-end system to play smoothly with those graphics. So maybe this was a compromise that they came up with a little
bit
late in the game.
But you're not being given the option as the consumer.
Right.
You have... If it was a compromise, then you give the option. You don't default it and then lock.
Right.
It's kind of... I don't remember what system this was, but... Devil May Cry 4, I think it was.
Dunk.
Yeah. Devil May Cry 4. In Japan, there is a normal mode and a hard mode.
Right.
In America, the hard mode is the normal mode.
Yes.
And it was... They actually had to re-release the game being less difficult because in America, you didn't get the option to not play it on basically the extreme level. And I don't understand why that option wasn't there. Why? Because clearly you did it in Japan.
Right.
Why couldn't you include the normal mode as even an option? Even if you wanted it to default on hard, why not the option that this is a little too stupidly difficult. I'd like to go back a step.
Yeah.
Why do they do that?
I don't know. And that's part of, you know, getting back to the marketing of E3. And you know, we're not just graphically, but gameplay in general. If I remember right, wasn't it before Mass Effect 3 came out? Wasn't it at E3 or a similar expo that we had?
It was either E3 or PAX. I know what you're talking about.
But we had EA and BioWare both standing up going, this is going, we're not going to be an A, B, or C ending, or it's not going to end up.
That's where
being.
They made all the promises that came back to bite them in the ass.
Right. And it was just utterly silly. And look, guys, we think your games are cool. You're AAA companies for a reason. You're not idiots.
Stop acting like
it. One of the basic rules of gaining a reputation as a company is under promise, over deliver. The reason that Rolls-Royce has their reputation of being the top luxury cars in the world is because they don't walk out and go, we make the top luxury cars in the world.
You just know it.
No, they walk out and they say, we make really nice cars and here's their features. And everybody else goes, you guys are up top. The reason everybody knows Rolex watches and the reason why you can find fake Rolex watches and stuff like
Prada
that
purses and shit
is because people know the brand. They expect, there's just an expectation of quality. Rolex doesn't walk out and go, we're the fucking best bitches. You want to watch? We kick ass.
John Romero is about to make you his bitch.
Right. You know, they don't walk out and do that. They just make good products. And that's what I'm, that's why I think the indie scene is coming off. And coming up and growing.
Because the product is speaking for itself, you mean?
Yes, because the good products and the good developers float to the top. And between YouTube and now E3 is paying attention, and communities like Steam, where, yes, there's plenty of absolute shit on Steam. Don't get me wrong. It's out there.
You're going to get that on anything, though. You're right. You're going to get the deluge of shovelware.
But yeah, the same thing I said about podcasts stands. The good stuff floats to the top. And that's what's happening in the indie scene right now, is people are going out and making good games. People are playing these good games and recording their gameplay and getting out there. And you've got people like I said, like Total Biscuit, like PewDiePie and Markiplier, and whether you like them or not, they're at least going out there and playing these games. Now, to be fair, when you compare people like Jim Sterling and Total Biscuit and Yahtzee Crenshaw to people like Markiplier, PewDiePie, and
some of the other players. I hate PiePie. I hate him.
I know. But the deal with PewDiePie is he's catering to his audience, and he's playing games that are not necessarily good, like Goat Simulator and some of the jump scare games, and he's playing it up. But if you go to reliable sources that actually talk about the games and concentrate on the games themselves and not their reaction to the games, like I said, my top three that I go to every time is Jim Sterling, Yahtzee Crenshaw, and Total Biscuit.
Well, what about when
real journalism, it's out there.
What about when the game that maybe not, doesn't take everything by storm is the one that nobody sees coming, like Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon? Even Ubisoft never thought that game would take off the way it did.
They were just having fun.
Yeah, they were just making a goof of a game. Actually, when they first released the trailer for that, Scott, people thought it, because they released it on April 1st. They thought it was just an April Fool's joke, that this is just a trailer. That's, you know, all they rendered was the stuff for the trailer.
Right.
Nobody thought this could be a real game. What about when a game like that, it's not promoted at E3, and it's everywhere? Why do you think that E3 holds the stature that it does when something like Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon can escape, whereas, and then some of the, quote, like you put, AAA titles can just flounder sometimes?
Because E3 is an old convention. It's like, you know, we're not getting rid of television anytime soon.
It's old convention in both terms of that word.
I know.
I didn't know if you meant that on purpose or not.
Not quite. But it's, we're not getting rid of TV anytime soon. TV news personalities are still TV news personalities, even though most people get their news from other sources.
The internet, right.
You know, and E3 is the same way. It's the showcase. It's the place where they can go and put a light on this stuff for a change.
Then do you think that E3 has grown too big for itself? Like with what happened to Comic-Con? Like how Comic-Con started as Comic-Con and very quickly in the 2000s got... There's almost nothing to do with comics anymore. It's MediaCon. Do you think E3 has gotten to that point where or it's in danger of getting to that point where it's too big for itself?
No, it already has. It fell. It came back. E3 used to be open to the public. And
it's just journalists.
It was insane. Just trying to get...
I remember just a couple of years ago, a bunch of the reviewerverse was at E3 for various ones.
And I think they still get in there on press passes or maybe media passes or something. But E3 has come down in size, and it's a difference between having all the great stuff and everybody there to see it, in which case most people never get to see it because they don't get there, versus having a concentrated bullhorn of news. And that's
kind of narrow casting in a way.
Kind of in a way, but you know, I mean, big announcements are made at E3, but instead of trying to cram everybody and their brother into the convention center and onto the convention floor and nobody being able to move, they've narrowed the audience to, okay, who can we allow in here that will go out and tell others?
But isn't that somewhat alienating to just maybe a fan who has no press connections? That's like, I am a diehard Sonyite. I really want to see Sony's presentation, but I got no media connections. Well, fuck me then, huh?
Yeah, basically that's... And I understand where you're coming from, but E3 had that attitude at one point, and it got to the point that people would, you know, the public would come in and see the presentations, and the media couldn't get in.
Well, you think a press pass would get you
front, you would whatever. Think, but no. They opened it up to the public at one time, and now they've, like I said, they've since gotten a lot smaller, gotten a lot more concentrated, and really gotten, you know, they're on point as opposed to being, yeah, just kind of a free-for-all.
Well, do you think E3 is going to continue to get bigger with what they've got with the journalists and whatnot? Do you think they'll open it back up to the public, or do you think this, where it is now, is going to become the new standard?
I hope they don't.
Because in all honesty, most people I talk to nowadays prefer PAX because the public can get in.
Yeah.
The public wants to be part of this, and I think E3 excluding them is again, short-term gain. They're not playing a long game.
See, and I think exactly the opposite. I think by making it exclusive, they make more people want to see it. So they get out, you know, they get the right people to see it. They get the right people to cover it. And I think with as many media outlets now and with them live casting and live streaming on YouTube and stuff like that, I think they've got it right. And PAX, I've heard the same complaints about PAX that I had. That I heard about
PAX E3. PAX is also getting too big.
PAX is getting way too big. And you have the Penny Arcade guys making mistakes and not handling PR correctly.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry to keep going to Comic-Con, but that's what happened with Comic-Con. People go to Comic-Con like, hey, I'm going to see the new trailer for this or whatnot, the presentation for the Expendables, and you can't get in. Because there's so many people trying to get into the same exhibit. When you get too big, you end up becoming exclusionary by default.
Right, and you don't get a chance. And you can't craft your audience. And I think that's what E3 gets right. They craft their audience.
But look at the 90s or even 80s version of Gen Con. You had a certain amount of people that just not everybody can just wander in off the street. It's... Or you can't buy a ticket at the door. It's, no, I think the public should be able to get in. You've got to get your ticket, and there is a set amount. After that, you're just getting too big.
Okay.
Which is what happened to Gen Con, too. But them also moving out of Wisconsin was fucking disastrous because their attendance levels went up. Their quality levels went down when they moved out of Wisconsin.
I don't know. They moved to Indianapolis, and Gen Con's actually pretty damn cool.
From the people I've talked to that were at 90s Gen Cons in Wisconsin, and
that's because you're talking to all Wisconsin people.
But they're like, you know what? It's just, it doesn't, it feels less
personal.
Less personal and more just corporate and cold.
Which is the way it, well, let's face it. It's, that's the nature of cons anymore these days.
Well, I don't know if I'd agree with that. We can do a whole episode on cons. That's not this one. But I just think, I don't know, I think E3 is where all the slick snake oil salesmen nowadays go. And they show you all their all the baubles, and you ooh and ah over them. And most of the journalists, most of the coverage I've seen, I'm just going from this year, okay? Most of the coverage I've seen is, oh my God, this is going to be great. And people are not looking at it as, wait a minute, these same promises were made last year and not delivered on. These same promises were made in 2012 and not delivered on. These same promises were made in 2011 and not. It's like they kind of, it's like an abused wife. But this time they mean they're sorry, and this time's going to be different.
I'm not going to compare this to domestic abuse the way you did. I agree with you to a point, especially when it comes to the AAAs. However, I think that E3 has crafted their audience well enough that you also have people paying attention to indie gamers there, and people paying attention to indie developers there. And I think they got it right. Yes, there are snake oil salesmen, as there will be anywhere. But I think that there are some true gems there, and I think E3 is a chance for them to shine. They do get overshadowed by the big presentations, but I think that's going to change.
Because like I talked earlier about the national news coverage, that was all about Microsoft.
Yeah, that
Sony
was...
with a little mention of Nintendo. None of the indie developers mentioned on NBC Nightly News.
Which is why E3 has crafted their audience the way they did, because they also invite the new media community. They also invite YouTube journalists. YouTube game journalists can go to E3. And I think that's the hardcore audience that follows and pays attention to the not quite... they go... Okay, there's going to be tons of coverage on the Microsoft stuff. There's going to be tons of coverage on Sony, and there's going to be some coverage on Nintendo. I'm going to leave that stuff alone. But here's a corner of E3 that you guys may not know about.
So if I'm reading what you're saying right, you're saying the person who's going to only hear about Microsoft's coverage on NBC Nightly News isn't going to care. Whereas the people who are going to be watching, like you put a YouTube journalist or whatnot, they're the ones who are going to go, yeah, I can see the Microsoft shit anywhere. I want to see this shit I can't see on the mainstream, on the lamestream media.
And I want this particular journalist's take on it. You know, maybe even like in the case of Total Biscuit, he's doing three episodes, one on Sony, one on Microsoft, and one on Nintendo. And I want to see his insight into it because he's a professional gamer. And you know, I like what he plays. I like how he plays. I'm going to pay attention to him. And that's the audience that matters. That's, you know, the audience that not only has an Xbox One upstairs, but has Steam on a computer in another room. Or maybe they've got a Valve box, if we ever see Valve boxes. but, you know, that's the audience that the game companies are trying to reach. And I think E3 has shaped their audience to the point that even the smaller developers will get a voice. And if the smaller developer makes a great game, like Entwined, it's going to get out and it's going to get known.
All right. Well, then what about gaming conventions in the other sense of the word convention? Do you think that something like E3 pushes what they want to be the next big thing in gaming, or what will be? Let's go back to the multiplayer thing. Do you think they're pushing that because they think that's what the audience wants, or because that's what they want the audience to want?
What E3 pushes is decided upon by the companies. And let's be honest, it's what they want to push. Let's look at E3 2013 with the Xbox One. We saw what Microsoft wanted to push.
And God, did it not work.
And it didn't work. This time around, the innovation that we saw was, like I said, mainly on the Sony side. but it's what they wanted to push. And they kind of went, hey, look, we made this neat stuff. Oh, and here's Destiny.
But then is that actual innovation then? Or are they telling you what will be innovative instead of asking you, and I mean you as the audience, what will be innovative? Because it, you know, it kind of comes down to the gaming tropes. Every game nowadays, you've still got the, you've got the escort mission, and you got all these things that everyone complains about, but still show up in every game and are somehow touted at E3 as, this is awesome and you guys love this. And then every journalist goes, no, this is what we hate about gaming. Will you quit it?
Well, that huh?
What do you mean?
No, I'm lost on you because...
I saw one, I can't remember if it was Sony or Microsoft or whatever, where they talked about how, you know, you get to take this one character to this other place, and I'm like, it's an escort mission. You're touting the amazing AI in an escort mission. Everyone hates escort missions. Have you not learned?
Well, everyone hates escort missions because of really shitty AI. But, look... I think what they're pushing is the stuff that they're working on. And they're hoping that the audience will latch on to it. You know, I guess they're showing off what they do. I don't know whether they're hoping that the audience is going to latch on to it, but
something like an escort mission has a history of being hated. So why would they on an executive level think, this time, the audience is really going to latch on.
Well, this time you're not escorting an idiot. I mean, that's the way I would spin it and push it. This time you're not escorting an idiot. Look at Bioshock Infinite.
Which I've never played. So
yeah, a good chunk of that game is looking for and or working with / escorting Elizabeth. And it's not like an escort mission because you don't have to protect her.
Okay, before we close, what about the lies when it comes to gameplay time? Do you think it is a lie, because it technically isn't, when they say like 80 hours of gameplay in the new Skyrim game, when most of that is side fetch quests for maybe 60 of that 80 hours, just playing the campaign is a 20-hour game? You go, okay, you might not have lied, but you definitely stretch the truth that most of this game is fucking fetch quests.
Skyrim's a bad example on that one, but yeah, I see your
I just
point.
Used like, it, but I mean, what I'm asking you is that lying or is that just leaving out certain details?
No, it's not lying. It really isn't lying, because if you do every single side quest of the game, then yeah, you're going to increase game time, and I don't know.
Is it sleazy?
No, not really, because every gamer knows it.
You would assume that.
No, I'm not assuming that. I know that.
I don't know that every gamer knows that. I would assume
every gamer over the age of 18 knows that.
Over the age of 18, but there's a big, big market for the under 18 there, bucko.
Yeah, and they're learning.
Too slow.
They'll get there.
Well, so what are your final thoughts on E3 as we wrap up?
I like it. I think that it's a concentrated audience. It is a bunch of companies talking to the right people, whether, you know, yeah, we're going to find out things that don't pan out the way that is said. We're going to find out things that were straight up lies, and we're going to see pushbacks and delays and stuff like that. But it really is the only chance to where Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo, if they so choose, can pull out all the stops and wow people. Commercials don't give you that chance anymore. Basic PR, YouTube videos, however you decide to get out there, there is no place for spectacle. E3 is a place for companies to go, okay, let's spend a couple million bucks and put on a fucking spectacle.
Which is, I think, the problem. I think this is all about shysterism. I think this is all about just trying to get you in the door and not delivering what they promise. And I think this is just a collection of liars telling lies to other liars who are going to lie to the audience.
But it's a damn good show.
So we want to thank Andrew Joyce again.
Yes, thank you, Andrew
from
Joyce.
From Console Alliance, if I can fucking say it properly. ConsoleAlliance.com. It's a really good website. You guys should check it out. So... thank you for listening. Don't forget, we have our Patreon. Yes, I'm saying it like that on purpose. We have our Patreon. There's the Adam and Eve codes. There's the 1201beyond.com and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.